notable people of and from the international art scene call him an alchemist, a magician, a philosopher, a chemist, a poet, an historian, and of course an accomplished abstractionist and instrumentalist. His studios are as inspiring as the great outdoors. Whether he be in his forested home along the Delaware River between Bucks County and the Pocono Mountains, or his adventurous art spaces in the deserts of California or along the Pacific Ocean. It is obvious our guest today responds to the ever-changing conditions of its life force, and then revealing the complex processes of selective layering on his own surfaces, up to 50 stratums of paint sequentially applied, with only the most significant events of each layer preserved within his canvas. This is Lehigh Valley Art Salon, WDIY 88.1, Allentown. I remain George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host, Kate Scuffle, we are very enthusiastic about The Essence of Nature, the newest one-person exhibition in the Scheller, Rodale, and Fowler galleries at Allentown Art Museum, opening Sunday, January the 19th. Today, world-celebrated artist Paul Herron shares his thoughts with us. How very pleased we are, Paul, to be in your company.
It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Paul. I think George may have stolen a little bit of my thunder. I was going to give... No, you're fine. Going to give first the basics. As we said, the show's opening this coming weekend. It's Paul Herron, Essence of Nature, at the Allentown Art Museum. Folks that are eager, that can't wait and want a first glimpse, can join the museum for the preview party on Saturday evening. And you can find out more about that at their website, food, music, and, of course, Paul and his work. But let's talk a little bit about the show. This is a huge show and a real celebration of not just the most recent work, but a real overview and a spanning a great length of time of your work.
It's 122 pieces, paintings, drawings, music, video, and it's an amalgamation of work that I've done, I'd say, over the past 20 years, more specifically over the past 13 years.
Okay. And what, given that, and given the huge body of work you would have to choose from, though, can you talk a little bit about how you chose what and what the relationships are? What felt right to include in this and why?
There's a continuity to the painting and the process. And this particular group of paintings really began back in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. And the pieces speak to each other, and it's a matter of just seeing the relationship from one to the other. For the audience viewing the exhibition, I want them to be able to see the process from, you know, back in the, like, 91, 92, 93, up to the current paintings. And the best way to do that is to have pieces that are indicative of those different periods, and, you know, they all have the relationship together. So it'll be an interesting event all the way around.
We've been talking a little bit earlier about, I think today you got at least a first look at some sense of what the pieces will be like together. And, you know, I, as a layperson, not a visual artist, I'd never thought about that kind of the setup, the arrangement, the relationship in the room. Was it interesting? Was it different? I mean,
it's extraordinary. Yeah. The process of making the paintings is so different than the process of exhibiting the paintings. And curators are so helpful in allowing, you know, decisions to be made in that way. But ultimately, you know, when the artist is live, you know, he has some input into the whole thing. And there are paintings that I have not seen together, because of the size. And in the one case, in the Scheller Gallery, there's three paintings that are 7 foot by 9 foot. And I don't have the wall space to put all three of those paintings on one wall at the studio. So consequently, today is the first time I saw them side by side. And it was an extraordinary experience. And then there were other pieces that I hadn't seen together, because I hadn't, you know, I did one painting about 5 years ago, and it's been exhibited in Los Angeles and at the New Arts Program down near Kutztown, and it's been packed up.
Yeah.
But I knew it was one that I wanted to exhibit because I recently completed a second, Elegy to a Dream, and this was Elegy to a Dream number one.
Right.
So I wanted to have both of those together, and today was the first time I saw them both together. Never saw them like that. So the experience for me is you know, consciousness-raising on a lot of different levels, and I'm hoping it does the same thing for the audience.
I think it's particularly interesting given when we were talking also about, and I'd like you to talk a little bit more about how the paintings are made and the process. And we've talked about provenance, background, that kind of carrying on of an art history and expressionism, modernism. I think it would be interesting to folks, it was to me, the inspirations for some of the work and the relationships. There was a poet, George Sepphoris.
George Sepphoris,
for instance,
yeah.
The three pieces in the show speak to or were influenced by, and you were telling us a little bit about
one of my favorite artists in the later part of the 20th century, early 21st century, was Cy Twombly. Mm-hmm. And I really think that, you know, Cy had a real vision for the future of painting. And he died a few years back. But I'd read, I think it was in Red Book, that there was an interview where somebody had gone to his studio and they looked at his work table shortly after he had passed. And there were a couple of books lying about, a Monet book, a Turner book, and a George Sepphoris, a small George Sepphoris book called Three Secret Poems. And George Sepphoris was a Nobel laureate for poetry. He won that in 1967. He's a Greek poet. But apparently, Cy Twombly was interested enough to have it in his studio to be looking at it. And there's the images that the poetry evokes would be something that I could see Twombly using.
Mm-hmm.
And because of my interest in the classics and in mythology, because of my interest in Cy Twombly, it almost seemed like a homage to maybe get a hold of the book and then begin to see what I could do with those kind of images in my paintings. And so that's how some of that came about. But the poetry was so rich with imagery that the edification process was really trying at times because there was such significant information that we couldn't, you know, I couldn't retain because there was other information that had to be there. So those were the inspirations for those three pieces.
But certainly you are affected by your environment.
Indeed.
And indeed, that is a great part of the essence of nature.
Absolutely.
In the exhibition. Because you work not only here on the East Coast, but on the West Coast as well, and in some other countries, that affectation brings us to some of the pieces that you've created.
And nature, because I was going to say the Sepphoris poetry, the little bit I've read, it would seem to me there's that real connection to the natural world as well, among other things, among
right.
other imagery going on. But
I think all great poetry, music, I mean, everything has some kind of a reference to nature in one way or the other.
Yes.
And, you know, my work changes a lot. When I work on the East Coast, the abundance of the eastern forests, the abundance of growth and the foliage, there's so much to see and there's so much to depict, you know, in trying to understand the relationship of what's going on day by day. And then when I go to the West Coast, you know, you have these large generalizations like these deserts or as far as you could see, or an ocean. When you stand on the beach in Malibu, I mean, there's 5,000 miles of ocean in front of you. And there's a different sort of generalization. There's more specificity to the work when I'm here on the East Coast. And also the seasonal changes that occur. I mean, things are changing daily. When I'm painting on the East Coast, I mix paint every morning appropriate to the colors that I'm seeing outside. But by noontime, I'm mixing different paint. And in the course of a day, and you know, a long day of painting, I mean, I could mix 30, 40 colors, you know, little containers of colors that I need to use. And I think, well, I'll use that color tomorrow because, you know, in the morning I'll be painting again. Well, guess what? The color's not the same. And that's a wonderful experience. It's one of the reasons I love, you know, being in this area, this region. It just, it's always a feast for the eyes.
I would imagine that informs the length of time it takes to finish a work, wouldn't it? I mean, do things get put away and brought back out? Do they make journeys through the seasons with you?
Well, some of the paintings, some of the paintings do. Some of the paintings, they work, they move quickly. They mm-hmm. move with the season. Mm-hmm. Whereas other paintings, depending upon what issues I'm trying to resolve with the painting or what issues I'm trying to resolve with painting in general, the pieces could end up taking years. Mm. I mean, I have paintings at the studio right now that I started when I first got this studio back in 1999, and they're not completed. It doesn't mean that I've abandoned them. I don't know how to complete them yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just have to kind of watch and wait. You know, the answers will come. You know, I do have a dialogue with these pieces. Some happen very quickly. They happen as quickly as the seasons, and others take some time. But I don't manufacture paintings, mm-hmm. and it's not a decorative thing that I'm trying to achieve. There's a transcendent quality that I'm trying to achieve.
I remember in our brief chat yesterday, I posed a question to you. But, Paul, when is your painting finished? When is it finished?
I know.
And your answer was just superb.
And when it's done. But I'm lifting that from Agony and the Ecstasy.
Of course, but still, how does an artist know?
And that's that dialogue.
Yeah. I had a friend of mine, a collector up in New York, and he always said, be careful, you know, kill the artist before he kills the painting.
Oh, that's great. But I'm curious, too, though, when you talk about the time you've been at the current studio, prior to that, a lot of the studio spaces that you'd worked in Bethlehem and such would have been more urban. And how did that change the work to be able to be outside of that more regularly?
I think my career goals have changed. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're a student and when you move forward, you know, with your career, you're thinking about doing certain things which involve, you know, getting involved with the art market and so forth. And then as you gradually find yourself, you know, you become more specific about what it is you want. And, you know, I've always had this, you know, abiding love for nature. And it was simply a matter of getting out of my own way and going to it to really focus on it. And that's, you know, kind of what I did, you know, I started doing in the early 90s. And that brought me to Arcadia today.
And did Arcadia precede the work on the West Coast with the desert spaces as well as the shoreline?
I've been doing all that sort of work since the 1980s, the late 1980s, but not with as much specificity.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting too. Essence of Nature. When I first saw the name of the show, I know it doesn't exclude the themes, but that seems to be almost a kind of a building when you talk about knowing what you want to do and where mm-hmm. you're heading. Mm-hmm. That this is where you've arrived, in a sense. That's not a world to explore for decades. But
I think what's happening really is, you know, as we enter this, you know, new millennium mm-hmm. and a new century. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that it was in our history that I wanted to bring forward, the history mm-hmm. of painting, the history of, you know, human civilization. And there was so much the Greeks had to teach us. Plato and Aristotle spoke a lot about the essence of nature. And it's been a theme that everybody has, you know, written about, including Ralph Waldo Emerson. So, it just seemed to me appropriate at this time to do this show.
Great. We're going to talk more with Paul. We're going to ask him about a story he told us the other day that I thought was quite interesting about him going into a museum and touching the painting. So we're going to ask Paul to talk a little bit about that. We shall return momentarily to hear more of Paul's visual and musical adventures after this salient message.
Join us for Winter Blast 2014. WDIY's annual party is happening Saturday, February 1st at Miller Symphony Hall in Allentown. Tickets are available at wdiy.org. Winter Blast tickets include complimentary food, drinks, and the live rockin' sounds of the Doughboys. Go to wdiy.org and get your tickets today.
For program support, we thank Jenny Squali, 102 East 4th Street, Bethlehem, serving homemade Malaysian cuisine infused with spices and combined with other ingredients to reflect the various cultures in Malaysia. All food is made fresh. For hours, daily specials, and more information, 610-758-8088 or jennysquali.com.
Welcome back. We are chatting with artist extraordinaire Paul Herron and his latest exhibition opening this week at the Allentown Art Museum entitled The Essence of Nature. And we're looking very much forward to Saturday preview, but certainly opening on Sunday. I'm going to be there as well.
Wonderful.
But speaking of influences, too, and I was going to say, just remembering that, thinking about your family, you had mentioned that I think you have some family visiting on Sunday for the show. Childhood, this area, nature, urban, family support. Can you talk about? I was really compelled by how clear you were at a very early age about what you were here to do or wanted to do. And if you could talk a little bit about that, and then how music might have confused it for a moment. But, you know.
Yeah, I grew up only a few blocks away from here. Okay. You know, the first I'd say 4 or 5 years was in the shadows of the blast furnaces in South Bethlehem, and that was really, really amazing to me. Mm. I mean, it was extraordinary because it was, you know, it's like Disney World because these things would light up the sky, you know, every hour or so. And to see that and the sound of the steel when the steel company was in full production, the sound of the steel like dropping these huge I-beams, the houses would shake. Mm. And everybody just got used to it.
Yeah.
For me, the sound, the din of the whole thing was interesting as a child and entertaining as well. But then my father and mother, they used to love just going to the country. My father was very much of a country guy. He understood nature and loved to just go for, you know, walks for hours and hours in the woods. And would always escape to, you know, somewhere or other, you know, to the Poconos or along the Delaware River, along the Lehigh River. And, you know, to go for these walks. And the contrast between the two, the urban, the industrialization, and then the absolute silence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as years mm-hmm. went on, I mean, I continue to explore those things, going into super urban cultures, and then augment that by going into areas that you can't even hear anything, you know, whether you're underwater. Or I remember being out in the desert, out in Zuni, New Mexico, which is about 300 miles west of Albuquerque. And there was nobody there. There was no sound, no automobiles. And I got out of the vehicle and I started walking in the desert. And you could hear the wind. You know, that was the only thing you could hear. Periodically, you'd be able to hear, you know, a bird or something. But, you know, those kind of the silence was so, you know, contrast to the other sounds that I had been experiencing in New York or in Los Angeles. So I've always liked the contrast. It helps me focus on the two different extremes. And, you know, I'm learning a lot about that whole thing in the process of making my own work.
That's interesting. You're talking about these spaces and you're talking about how they sound.
Yes.
As well as how they appear to you. And you're a musician in your own, very much a musician in your own right. You said by the time you were almost college age, people were kind of like, well, Paul, what are you going to study? And you're like, I can do both. But how do they complement each other for you?
It's just a matter of perception. For me, music has always been sort of like the shortcut. There's an immediate gratification for me with music. You know, once I learned how to play a couple of instruments, it was the kind of thing where, you know, if I could visualize something and I could do the same thing with the notes, whereby I could do something and see how the notes link together with another bunch of notes. Now, with paint, I would have to apply the paint, allow it to dry, overcoat it, and it would take much longer. So I always found music to be more of an immediate gratification. Paintings, they take a lot longer to evolve themselves. But, you know, with art, I mean, I've always known from the time I was 5 years old. But, you know, learning how to play an instrument, you know, when I was, you know, 8 or 9 or 10, that began to confuse me a little bit, because then it was like, well, what do you do? But, you know, of course you could do both.
But it's interesting, too, that the music, which I've listened to, thank you very much, is an overlaying of sounds and feelings, just the way the paintings are.
And exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. The process is the same for me, whether I'm doing drawings or paintings or video, photography, it doesn't matter. It's just that one will come quicker than the other, and they'll achieve resolution, you know, at a different speed. The paintings are the ones that really require a lot of finesse. Yeah. And there's a certain about, there's a imbuing the painting with a kind of energy, a consistent level of energy that is really, really important, as opposed to a frenetic or, you know, sporadic kind of energy. So that's another reason why the duration of the painting, if I'm not in that zone, I don't want to touch the painting or the particular painting that requires a certain energy.
Right. And we'd like you to, if you would, with your permission, share that little story with us that you told us about a few years ago when you were in the art museum.
The Allentown Art Museum had acquired one of my paintings a few years ago. And it was one called Proof Positive that I had done immediately after moving to Arcadia. And I had not seen the painting in years and years. And one Sunday afternoon, I was in the area, and I decided that, you know, we'd stop by and take a look at the piece. And so we did. You know, we'd stop by the museum and look at art, period. But as I'm going through the museum, I noticed the painting was there. And I was like, oh, my God. Now, these paintings are, like I said, 50, 60 layers. And they have a patina and a topography. And they're waxed and they're buffed. So when you touch them, they have a beautiful satin feel to them. And it's something that I really enjoy doing with my pieces. You know, just to feel the pieces and to trace the history of it. Mm-hmm. So when I saw the painting, my first response is to walk over to it and run my hands over the piece. And immediately a guard came up and tapped me on the shoulder and says, you know, you can't do that. And I told him, I said, it's okay. It's my painting. and I continued to touch the painting. And he comes back and he said, sir, you know, I have to remind you, you can't touch the paintings. And I pulled out my license, which I usually keep around my neck. And I said, no, I said, I'm the guy that did it. It's okay.
It's me.
And then he said, but it's not your painting anymore. Oh. And it dawned on me that it's not my painting. And that's another, as we began the interview, we were talking about, you know, seeing the exhibition and sometimes seeing the work when they're not my pieces anymore, but they're always my pieces, you know.
I was going to say, is it ever difficult to part?
Never difficult to part. You know, they need to take on a life of their own. They need to live their own lives. But, you know, when I see them, it's like seeing a family member you haven't seen for a year or two or three, you know?
Yes.
And, of course, I want to shake their hand.
Well, it's wonderful. We are very excited about the exhibition. We're going to be there supporting you, and we really need to tell our audiences to do the same.
So, again, that's the preview party is this Saturday evening, 6 to 9, at the Allentown Art Museum for Paul Heron's Essence of Nature. The show itself is going to run for a few months through almost May, I believe. Do I have the dates here?
May 19th.
May 19th. Don't miss it. It's a once-in-a-lifetime event, and we're really excited and delighted it's happening.
And we also want to remind our listeners that the WDIY Winter Blast is Saturday, February the 1st at Miller Symphony Hall. There's food, drinks, and the Doughboys, and you can get tickets at WDIY.org. Special thanks to Steve Aronson, who's the keeper of the brushes, the paints, and the canvases and the mighty microphones that we are a part here, that all of us are a part of here at WDIY. Thank you, Uncle Steve. Paul, it has been a pleasure. We must do this again, please.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.